Money and markets, I want to start with good news because there's too much depressing going on. The good news is McDonald's sales are down. Yes, it could be the economy, but let's hope Americans are getting smarter and realizing they're not saving money by eating food that's not food. Another piece of very good news is the election is over. The election was a depressing experience. It is every 4 years, as a majority of voters are encouraged and spend way too much time ignoring local elections where their votes really count and investing enormous amounts of time and attention and money on the presidential election, only to wake up the next day with a serious case of dread about what's next. And unfortunately, other than the independent candidates, there really wasn't very much discussion on a lot of the real problems that face us, and that's because they're unpleasant to talk about. As Jeb Bush once said, there's no political constituency for fiscal responsibility. The symptoms of voter fraud were quite significant on both sides of the aisle, with the latest report being significant military absentee ballots just mysteriously not arriving in time to be counted. So you know which way the Pentagon goes on this. My read is that Obama won the election in late July at the Bohemian Grove. If you look at both QE3 and the financial aspects of Hurricane Sandy, or those that I believe them to be, and I discussed those last week, these things would have had to be decided with a high-level consensus in the summer. And I think there's several things that won Obama the nod from Mr. Global, which are worth considering. First of all, Obama has done a remarkable job politically of delivering to the Mr. Global everything they want, from drones in the skies to $27+ trillion of bailouts. I mean, they've basically taken the equivalent of our retirement savings and shifted it to the banks in what I've described as a financial coup d'etat. That's an extraordinary political feat, and yet the president still commands enormous political support despite having engineered that. Panetta, DOD, and the Vatican interests behind them are in the catbird seat over sort of running the military complex, so there's no need to rock the boat. A lot's going on. If you turn over the administrations, you lose a lot of time and money, and there's risk from the turnover. So if the current guy's giving you everything you want, why bother to take the risk? With Romney coming in just that period of insecurity, you have the risk of sort of more squabbling and making things more difficult to manage globally. Romney said, no, my interpretation of the effort during the Grove to get Condoleezza Rice on the ticket, I think there was a good faith effort by George Shultz and some of the others to put a brown or black face on the ticket. Now, that would have not been acceptable to the various constituencies that Romney had to keep in the tent, but my guess is that Mr. Global needs a black or brown face on front of the American war machine. Romney's just the wrong face to put on the front of drones going all over the world and now into American skies. It's just too easy for the population to balk, whereas Obama's done a very good job of lulling everybody into complacency. Think of him as the velvet face to the iron fist. I think another telltale sign that occurred at the same time that the Grove happened was a Financial Times poll, and I mentioned this on the Sleary Report, had money managers saying that the markets would do significantly better under Obama. Ultimately, it's several things. It's a style choice. Obama is the original Ninja Turtle, whereas Romney's still sort of in the Lone Ranger style, and I think that style is much more soothing to the electorate. The other thing is it's a color choice. You have white voters declining as a percent of the voting population, but also you have globally, because now, of course, America is an empire, you have a lot more sort of non-white people, and Obama is, as the son of an African American, well, there's debate about that, but certainly African or African American, and his mother was Caucasian. He's seen as the more inclusive choice. Another piece of good news coming out of the election, there's little tidbits here and there. I was shocked to see that Gary Trudeau did a Doonesbury cartoon about the use of entrainment technology and subliminal programming, pointed out to me in the San Francisco, one of the San Francisco papers last week. You have a truck roaming a neighborhood spouting out different stuff for Romney. And then after the group of people sitting in their house criticizing Romney, suddenly they get hit by a beam and can't remember what they were thinking and saying. And I thought, oh, my good Lord, has it become acceptable to discuss this in the mainstream? But that is good news. Some more good news. Elizabeth Warren won in Massachusetts, so add one financially sane voice to the U.S. Senate. She's been quite a thorn in the side of the banksters, and they wouldn't. They did everything to stop her being put in charge of the new consumer agency, and because they stopped her, now she's bounced back in the form of a senator. So that'll be a thorn in their side and a good one. California approved Brown's tax plan for schools and said no, unfortunately, to Proposition 37. So GMO labeling has not happened in California, although, as I pointed out on the blog, there's a movement underfoot in India to ban GMOs for 10 years. That'll be interesting to see if that happens. Puerto Rico voted to become a state. That doesn't mean they will become a state, but it's moving them towards statehood. There are a number of nullification victories worth pointing out, some on related to the health care, but some related to legalizing marijuana, with several states voting to legalize marijuana. And if that makes growing hemp easy and legal in those states, that could be wonderful developments for them economically. As I said, the market's response has been very negative, with significant drops since the election. First, you got a bounce and then drops. Gold now just surpassing the U.S. equity markets in terms of performance for the year. Since the gold has been chasing the equity markets, that's a big turn, a big change for the year, and more as we discuss this with Franklin. I want to talk a little bit about what's expected for corporate earnings and what that might mean to employment. Hurricane Sandy, this story is far from over, and experience is far from over. Unfortunately, much more bad weather, snow, winds, a small hurricane in the New York and tri-state area. To give you sort of a disgusting spin on the whole thing, Chris Matthews gave a little speech as to why he was so glad they had a storm and why that was positive for the election. That sort of put it over the top. So I reposted a quote from Defense William Cohen's briefing at DOD. In fact, it's up on the DOD website. I've linked to it on the blog. Let me just read it. In April of 1997, United States Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen said, quote, "Others are engaging in an echo type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves." He made this statement at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy in its official capacity as the U.S. Secretary of Defense. Thus, this can be taken as an official... Well, I don't agree with that. Further, he used the words are, not could, might, or might someday in the future. He further added, "It's real, and that's the reason we have to intensify our efforts." That's linked. The link to the Department of Defense is up on the blog. Now, why do I mention all of this? Because Bloomberg came out for Obama after Hurricane Sandy hit, for a Republican to come out for Obama at that critical juncture is very frightening. You almost wonder if he wasn't worried about what his nanny might do to his, or his son's, or children's nanny might do to their grandchildren. So that was right before the election, and I said last week that made me very nervous, a big uh-oh about what might be coming with climate change. And then we have Obama hinting in his about his second term, saying that despite lingering partisan gridlock, calling for a future that, quote, isn't threatened by the destructive power of a warming planet. Given that, on top of Bloomberg's statement, made me very nervous. And sure enough, and it's up on the blog, out today comes Bloomberg saying that HSBC is now saying that Obama may levy a carbon tax to cut the U.S. deficit. Let me just read you a quote from it. "Barack Obama may consider introducing a tax on carbon emissions to help cut the U.S. budget deficit after winning a second term as president, according to HSBC Holdings, etc." It's up on the blog, and it's one of the reasons that the Republicans continuing to hold the House is very good news, because I assure you what Mr. Global would love is a global tax. And a carbon, think of a carbon tax as a property tax on everything. And I can't think of anything more worth your time and attention to stop and fight. The headlines are turning to the fiscal cliff. We are running in the United States a $1.5 trillion deficit approximately. And really, that's a political problem. It's not an economic problem. I put up another great video from Carl Deniger talking about the healthcare monopolies and how the use of monopolies has driven the cost of medicine up dramatically. I couldn't agree more with those statements. That monopoly problem is existent not just in healthcare, but in defense across the board in many of the different spending items. And you literally have an entire economy locked into old models that have not been optimized for generations. And so how exactly this is going to be evolved is a really big question, but expect very, very significant political problems. Of course, in many respects, this is going to be, I believe, and we'll talk more with Franklin about this, good for gold, because it's one of the few things that can't be printed. One of my favorite commentators sent me, was responding to a question today. I just wanted to read you from his email. The perpetuation of the $649 trillion global derivatives market, particularly as it relates to interest rate swaps, which are all interest rate products, is akin to an apple picker harvesting apples. The notion that the players doing the rigging of interest rates will need additional capital is like saying the people who are doing the picking of apples will somehow become short of apples. This will never happen with interest rates under the status quo, because the more you pick, the more rich in apples you appear to be. More than 80% of aggregate outstanding derivatives are OTC swap contracts. That's interest rate. Precious metals are the Achilles heel. The double-edged sword part of the equation will only manifest itself when the banks and officialdom are concerned, when people demand real physical metal in increasing quantities so as to overwhelm the criminals supplying IOUs. As long as investors are willing to accept ETFs and other paper proxies in lieu of real metal, this will never happen and the charade will go on. Okay, and very good point, because it's one of the few places within the financial system where there's real accountability back to something physical. A comment on employment right before the election, not surprisingly, the Labor Department delivered, quote, good news on employment. That caused me to post John Williams' latest update on unemployment charts. From everything I see in the economy, unemployment's a real problem, and it's going to get worse because the pressure, the market is delivering a real pressure onto corporations to shore up their earnings, which are projected to head down. How are they going to do that? By laying people off, by outsourcing more. So around and around we go. But take a look, because that's a much more realistic count on unemployment. For those of you who don't know John Williams and Shadow Stats, we did a great interview with him. It's in the archive. Just one note on science and technology. The article has gone off the front page of the blog, but if you click back, you can find it. It's a story of Ethiopian kids. A project called One Laptop Per Child decided that they would take Motorola Zoom tablets, their tablet PCs, and they would deliver them in boxes to an Ethiopian village where people didn't speak English. The kids didn't speak English and had absolutely no training. Not only would they deliver them, but they left them in their boxes. So the kids had to open them, figure out what they were, figure out how to get them going, figure out how to speak English, and then figure out sort of how they worked. And apparently they did it so well and so quickly that within 5 months, not only had they learned English sufficient to use them, but in fact to circumvent the security on the operating system so that they could customize settings and activate disabled hardware. It makes you realize, whoa.